So I want to talk tonight here on what to do when Christians hurt you. What to do when Christians hurt you. The Lord put this on my mind and my heart, and I trust it'll be helpful to you. One of the saddest stories that I ever have read was the story of Pat Tillman. Pat Tillman was an NFL player with the Arizona Cardinals, and he played college ball in Arizona. And he was kind of an all-American boy, kind of a man's man, a sharp guy. When the 9/11 attacks happened, he enlisted in the military. And shortly into his military career, he was killed. And it was obviously a great tragedy, and it kind of made the news. And it came out later on that his death was at the hands of fellow soldiers, that they accidentally killed him. They accidentally shot him. He had this interesting book written about the subject. You might read it. I'm trying to remember the name of the book, and it slipped my mind. Something like, I'm not going to tell you that right. It's Sebastian Younger who wrote the book, When Men Seek Glory, or something like that. Interesting story. Well, I've never been involved. I've never been in the military. I've never been involved personally in combat. And a lot of people who have been in the military haven't been in combat. The ones who have been in combat, I've noticed, are the ones least likely to actually talk about it. But I have noticed in spiritual warfare that it's common for us to wound one another. Friendly fire is really common. So I want to talk about that tonight. And I want to just share some really practical ideas. Some things about this I want you to notice. And you know this is true. Christians hurting other Christians is just really common. It's not a big shock. It shouldn't be a big shock to us. It happens in our families. Even families who love each other are probably the most likely people to hurt each other. So when you get together with Christians, you have people that hurt one another. When you have missionary groups get together, it's common you would think of all people, missionaries would be able to get along together really well. And, of course, they often do, and they do great exploits for God, but it's really, really common among missionaries to have conflict on the field, even among pastors, Christian workers to have conflict. And if you know anything about missions and Christian work, you know that it's pretty common. It is common. Not only is it common, but it's painful. It's especially painful because you kind of expect, well, hey, we're among friends here. This is my family. We're church. If you can go somewhere in the world and have nobody hurt you, wouldn't it be church? Or wouldn't I be able to be around my family and not get hurt? And the Proverbs 18 there, 14 says, the spirit of a man will sustain him in sickness, but who can bear a broken spirit? A broken spirit is a painful thing. It's a common thing to be hurt by Christians. It's common. If you're a new Christian, that's kind of news to you, but you'll figure that out really soon. It is. But it's not only is it common, but it's especially painful because you expect that people that know the Lord wouldn't hurt you, but they do. Our natural reactions to this are usually wrong. In other words, what is your natural reaction when somebody hurts you? And think about that for a while. What's the first reaction that you would have, the first response that you would normally take when somebody hurts you? I wrote a few down. Let me ask you this. What did you do the last time somebody hurt you? Did you run to a friend or family member and cry on their shoulder? You know why I put that one down first? Because that's what I would do. My first tendency would be to go to a family member and to tell them and get sympathy from a family member and cry on their shoulder. What did you do the last time somebody hurt you, especially maybe a Christian? Did you plot revenge? Hey, you ever done this? Do you do this? Do you secretly plot out the words that you can say to them that would just be wonderful and devastating? You do this? Anybody besides me do this? I think about this. Do you do this, Chris? I think about, oh, I could tell them that. I could tell them this. I could say that. I never will, but I could. And then every once in a while, a few of those things slip out. Do you tell somebody else? You go to somebody else and tell them that you've been hurt first? Think about that. Do you melt down emotionally? Yeah. Uh-huh. Or do you blow up? Or do you give up? Really commonly, when people have been hurt in the church or are among Christian friends, it's really common to say, I'm just going to get a new church, a new series of friends, or maybe even not go to church at all. That's really common. It's demonically common for people to say, hey, I got hurt, I'm done. And of course, obviously, you know, if you've been in Christian ministry and you watch the trajectory of people's lives, you realize what's going on then. that when they allow hurts to drive them away from fellowship and away from the Lord, then I believe Satan's won a great victory. I want to suggest tonight, and obviously there's a better way. I want to share with you tonight some things to do when Christians hurt you, okay? First of all, when somebody hurts you, lay it out before the Lord. Now, this is not just true about being hurt. It's about any difficulty that you have, any shocking news that you receive, any disappointment that you have, anything that kind of sets you back. But one of the most painful things that can happen to you is when a Christian hurts you, when somebody that you expected would be helpful or kind, or maybe even they hurt you because they ignored you, or they hurt you because they didn't care about you when they should have, I would suggest the first thing that you do is you lay it out before the Lord. This is obviously special wordings, lay it out before the Lord. And it comes from Isaiah 37. You might want to take your Bible and look in Isaiah 37. This is a topical talk I'm going to give you tonight. So we'll be in a number of places here in the Bible here tonight while we're talking. But this is about one of the kings of Judah, Hezekiah. He was a good king. And he was being threatened by Sennacherib. And Sennacherib was really bad news. Really, really bad news. As a matter of fact, it was common today in history, and there's a lot written about Sennacherib, extra biblical stuff written about Sennacherib. The biblical accounts are confirmed through in a number of different ways, not as if they needed to be, but they're confirmed in archaeology and extra biblical literature, and all of them agree on one thing. Sennacherib was one bad person, very, very dangerous. And he could back up his talk. And he was on a campaign, devastating surrounding cities, and obviously besieged Jerusalem and sent Rabshakeh, who I said to Lois, my wife and I said, I'll give you $50 if you can tell me who that guy was. $50, I bet her. I did. It wasn't a bet because I knew she wasn't going to be able to tell me. And she said, a guy in the Bible. I'm like, oh, you got me. He is. This guy in the Bible was Sennacherib's spokesman, and he was blasphemous. He cursed God, blasphemed God. You know, I got a word from the king for you. Your God can't save you. My king has captured your temples, and your God can't save you. And so this is, what did Hezekiah do? Well, he heard this, and he didn't respond, but he went to the temple, tore his clothes, rent his clothes, went to the temple, and then he got a letter that had the details in it, and then this is in verse 14, now I'm in Isaiah 37:14. Hezekiah received a letter from the hand of the messengers and read it, and Hezekiah went up to the house of the Lord, and he spread it out before the Lord. Then Hezekiah prayed to the Lord, saying, "O Lord of hosts, God of Israel, the one who dwells between the cherubim, you are God, you alone. Of all the kingdoms of the earth, you have made heaven and earth. Incline your ear, O Lord, and hear, and open your eyes, O Lord, and see. Hear all the words of Sennacherib, which he has sent to reproach the living God. Truly, Lord, the kings of Assyria have laid waste to all the nations and their lands and have cast their gods into the fire. And they were not gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore, they destroyed them. Now, therefore, O Lord, our God, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you are the Lord and you alone." This is good praying. This is good praying. Hezekiah isn't praying for God to deliver his own hide so much as he's praying for what? He's praying for God to vindicate his great name. And this is good praying. What's interesting is if one of the most beautiful places in the Bible to me is in is when Solomon dedicated the temple. 2 Chronicles chapter 6. There are these beautiful prayers as Solomon dedicates the temple. And what he says, to paraphrase what he says when he dedicates the temple, he says, okay, Lord, here is a temple where we can come and we can lay things out before you. We can pray. If there's ever a time when we sin against you and we don't have crops, this is a place where we can come and we can confess our sin and then you will restore our prosperity. If there's ever a time when we have disobeyed you and our enemies come in to crush us, this temple, this is a place where we can come and we can spread out our needs before you. We can confess our sins. Kings can do this. And Solomon, on his knees, lifting up his hands before the people in this beautiful picture, he says, this is what can happen. But there is no record in the next 250 years that any of the kings of Judah ever did that. until Hezekiah did it. Is that interesting? You know what that reminded me of? As I studied that, I thought of an old hymn an old gospel song we used to sing when I was a boy. How long has it been? You remember that? How long has it been since you knelt with the dawn and you prayed? How long has it been since you took what was bothering you that you tend to tell other people about or complain about or worry about or stay awake at night? And just took that and you spread it out before the Lord. Maybe you took some physical evidence of that and you just spread it out before the Lord. So when somebody hurts you, the first person you want to go to is the Lord. Not even your own family. Not even your own friends. This is going to be really counterintuitive, isn't it? The first person you want to go to, it's really, and I've noticed this because I have a family and they're very dear to me, that if I'm hurt and somebody wounds me and hurts me, I may be prepared to forgive them very soon, and I may put a burden on my family that's very hard for them because it's going to be harder for them to forgive them than it is for me to forgive them. And so now I just created an additional burden. I'm not saying that your family can't encourage you or help you. Take your Bibles and look in Psalm 55. And often when we have, when the burdens of life press on us or the questions of life confuse us, often the Psalms are the place to go because there's not a human emotion. There's not a human circumstance that's not addressed in really raw terms in the Psalms. And that's one of the reasons why I think seasoned Christians tend to love the Psalms. And I love the Psalms, and I like to think of myself as a seasoned Christian. Maybe I'm just old, but I love the Psalms. Now, in Psalm 55, this is a psalm for burdened people. Look in Psalm 55 and verse 22. Cast your burden on the Lord, and he will sustain you. Cast your burden on the Lord. Now, the burden that David is talking about in Psalm 55 is a burden of hurt from a friend, a betrayal. Did you know that? Psalm 55 is a great place to go if somebody divorced you. It's a great place to go if somebody hurt you, committed adultery on you, or betrayed you, or disappointed you, or talked about you, and you had a deep, bitter disappointment. Maybe you have a betrayal or a disloyalty from a husband or wife or a child or father or stepdad or another Christian. Listen to verses 12 through 14. It was not an enemy who reproaches me. Then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me. Then I could hide from him. But it was you, a man my equal, my companion, my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and we walked to the house of God in a throng. Bible scholars like to make guesses about what the circumstances behind Psalm 55 are. Do you mind if I tell you what my favorite guess is about this? And it's an educated guess. You don't know it for sure. It's a Psalm of David. David was betrayed by a close counselor when his own son Absalom betrayed him. He had a counselor named Ahithophel, and Ahithophel's counsel was so sound and so helpful. It was as if, the Bible says, as if he spoke as the oracles of God. So David, any wise leader, brings people around him that are smarter than he is, more perceptive, have skills and ideas that he doesn't have, and then he listens to them. And then he's really wise. He doesn't make decisions unless he's really listened to them and kind of weighed those. And David did this with Ahithophel. And then when Absalom revolted against David, Absalom, his own son, that's a big, long story, he actually drives David out of Jerusalem. And you see that this is kind of, you can read that in this psalm as well. And Ahithophel then goes over to give counsel to his son. This doesn't really end well for Ahithophel. And this is why some people believe that Ahithophel is a kind of a type, if you will, a foreshadowing of Judas. Because they ended the same way. They both betrayed their leader and then they ended up hanging themselves. This, however, Psalm 55 is helpful because what Psalm 55 is saying to do, it expresses the emotion and the complaint of having somebody betray you and hurt you. But what is it telling us to do? What does it say to do? It says to pray. That in shorthand, it says to pray. Verse 1, give ear to my prayer, O God. Don't hide yourself from my supplication. Verse 16 and verse 17. As for me, I will call upon God. The Lord will save me. Evening and morning and at noon I will pray and I will cry aloud and I will lift up my voice. That's just great advice. If you have a burden, verse 22, cast it on the Lord. If you, in the original language there, like if you, in the Septuagint, it's like this is a direct quote. 1 Peter 5:7 is a direct word-for-word quote from this verse, 22. Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you, comes from this idea. And this is what you want to do. You can't bear the burdens of life alone. You certainly can't bear the burden of betrayal alone. When somebody who's a Christian betrays you or hurts you, or maybe you've even misunderstood them, but it feels very, very painful. Somebody that's a family member, or somebody that you love, or somebody that you looked up to for even spiritual leadership or counsel disappoints you. Take it to the Lord and lay it out before the Lord first. Don't go to anybody else first, but lay it out before the Lord. Take your burden to the Lord. I was 18 years old. I had an answer to prayer. I was hired at the Union City Body Company. This was a UAW shop. This was a good summer job. Good pay, good benefits. It was a real blessing. And not too far from my home, and my dad told me, you know, can you, my dad was raised by people who lived through the Depression. And so he had this, if somebody's going to work, everything in the household stops until that person has what they need to be on time for work. It was like life and death. It wasn't like, oh, you're going to work? Okay, yeah, see you later. It was, Kenny's going to work. You know, and my dad would go into kind of like serious mode, and he would be getting my lunch or helping me get to work on time and making sure the car was running and be off to work. And I got this good job. Well, anyway, I went out to the Union City Body Company, and they called me College Boy because I had this deal where I would be going to college, and they knew that, and so I didn't have a name. I just got called College Boy. And the guys would enjoy figuring out things I didn't know, which really wasn't that hard. I mean, I'm 18. I don't know much of anything. And so they would really enjoy figuring out things I didn't know and then openly mocking me about those things. It was just my summer. That's the way it went. It was a great summer. I worked there for 2 summers, made really good money, and I really, really learned what it looked like to work in a shop and see the labor that went on there. It was just hard, dirty work, frankly. And a lot of the guys were what the Bible would describe as lewd fellows of the baser sort. They were just bad news. They had filthy mouths, filthy minds, disregard for God and things. And there were some decent guys there, too, and some guys who knew the Lord, but not many, not many. One day, I was working second shift, and we were upstairs in an old part of the warehouse. And there was this old guy who was an old, probably really old. He was like 45 or something. And I was 18, and they were moving a big deck because we were building these truck parts, the high cube trucks for the GM plant. They would go on the like a van front end, and they would have the cube, look like a bread truck, you know. And I had this big deck on a high-low, and they were moving it, and he was driving it in across the floor, and he hit a bump or went in a hole or something, and that deck started to tip over. And I instinctively just reached out to catch it, which was extremely foolish because it weighed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds. And I'll never forget this old guy just hit me like I was in a football game, and he used coarse language, and he slammed into me, and he said, "Don't ever do that again, College Boy. Don't ever do that. That thing will kill you." And I looked at him, and immediately I realized that man cared about me, and it scared him. He wasn't ever going to be nice to me. He wasn't ever going to say anything nice to me. But he's basically saying, you don't have a chance in the world of carrying that burden. And if you think that you have a human friend that you can go to, if you can carry a burden of betrayal alone, or you have a human burden that you, a human friend that you can go to, and the two of you together, you can just like share it with them, and then that's going to be okay, and they're going to handle that right, and you're going to land on your feet, you're fooling yourself, because it doesn't work like that. Betrayal is a burden that's too heavy for a person to bear alone. So take it and lay it out before the Lord. Now, good counsel, isn't it? And I just tell you, any burden you have, any bill you have to pay, or any person that's misunderstood you, or any fearful thing that you're facing tonight, in a few minutes here we're going to stop, and you can just take that and you can say, "Dear Heavenly Father, I don't know what I'm going to do. I got loved ones that aren't where they ought to be. And I can't do anything about that. But Lord, I just take it to you. And I lay this out before you tonight. Isn't there something about that? That's what God's men and women have done. One person wrote it like this in kind of poetic form. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. Another person put it like this. We have not because we ask not. That person was James. So that's number one. Is that helpful? You going to do that tonight? Lay it out before the Lord. Here's another one. This might come as a surprise to you, but overlook it. Overlook it. Pastor, how many of you all, Pastor, I know you did, how many of you went to the peacekeeping conflict resolution seminar at Byron? Handful, I think maybe, were you on that? Some of you, you're familiar with Ken Sandy's book, The Peacemaker, very helpful book on this. And this came to me real clearly. One thing that you can do when conflict comes, you can do this many, many times in a church, in a family, when an offense comes or somebody hurts you, you can just choose to absorb that and overlook it. Here's what the Bible says in Proverbs 19:11, discretion of a man makes him slow to anger. It's his glory to overlook a transgression. Think about that now. That's very helpful and practical. Lots of things, and matter of fact, all of us do this to some degree. You love somebody, you care about them, you're committed to them, you're sympathetic with them, so you go, you know what, that's not right, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm going to overlook it. I'm going to overlook the offense. The Bible says there are times when it's a glory, it's a God-like thing to not get angry but to overlook an offense. Now, in a minute, I'm going to tell you how to tell when it's wrong to overlook an offense. But for now, just think of this. First thing, take it and lay it out before the Lord. Second, possibly overlook the offense. Romans 15:1 says, we who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak. And Ephesians 4:32, how can you forget 4:32. Ephesians 4:32. That we'd be kind to one another and tenderhearted and forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. So how forgiving do you want to be to other people? Well, just as forgiving as God's been to you. And we'd just solve a lot of trouble, wouldn't it? If we extended the same forgiveness to other people that He's extended to us. That's just helpful stuff. So when do you not overlook, or when can you not overlook an offense? Well, it was just you. When it becomes a sin to overlook the offense, then you can't do that. In other words, when overlooking that offense against you and absorbing that offense against you, when overlooking that becomes a sin of omission. For instance, there are some things that, like Christian, like leaders, like Pat being a pastor, I think of this often. There are some things that if I overlook them, God's going to hold me responsible for that. That's thought-provoking, isn't it? As a dad, there are sometimes when you don't speak, you're going to be held responsible for your silence. Or when you don't act, Eli comes to my mind. His sons, Hophni and Phinehas, they disregarded the things of God, and he did speak to them. But later on, he was judged by God because he spoke, but he didn't do anything about it. So there were times when Eli couldn't say to the Lord, well, it's a glory of a man to overlook an offense. God would say to Eli, no, this is an offense you shouldn't have overlooked because it was violating my honor and they were disregarding the things of the Lord, and you can't overlook that. You overlook an offense when you can absorb that and you can suffer in love for that other person and just absorb that, and nobody else is harmed as a result of that. Sometimes that's a good option. The third thing, then, is this. And obviously, who do you go to first? Who do you go to first? Yeah, you do. Okay, don't go to a family member first or a sympathetic friend, but you go to the Lord first, lay it out before the Lord. And then you think, okay, after you've laid it out before, you can say, okay, Lord, now that I've talked with you and I've just given this to you, I'm going to absorb this, and I don't need to even tell anybody about it. I'm not going to act like a martyr. I'm going to joyfully suffer for this, that this person has hurt me, and I'm going to release them emotionally. I'm going to not bring it up against them to them. I'm not going to bring it up to other people, because you certainly have not forgiven somebody or overlooked it if you're bringing it up to anybody else. And Lord, I'm not even going to bring it up to you again. I'm just release them. It's a glorious thing. It's a God-like thing to do that. Now, you understand, why then do you go to the person that you hurt and try to reconcile? Look in Matthew 18. I mean, this is clear, but you should kind of have this really in your the way your mind works. You ought to think this way with often, and this happens frequently when I deal with people, is we tend to want to talk about things to other people and kind of get people on our side. Don't you agree that was a really despicable, repugnant, vile, evil, depraved thing, demonic thing to do? And they're like, yes, thank you, thank you. And you, now you've got yourself kind of worked up into a froth over it. That's not good. I've seen people do this. Yeah. But often the thing is, you know, and this is a pastor, something that will say to a person, have you gone and talked to them about it? They're like, no. Chuck and I had a conversation this afternoon. My boy, I was telling him about this material I was going to share with you. He said he was at Camp Barakel, and he saw another counselor doing something that he knew wasn't wise or good or right, and it could create problems, you know, for the camp and campers and so forth. So he went to the director over him, and he said to him, it was Dave Douglas, he said, hey, Dave, so-and-so, this other counselor, did such and such. And Dave said to him, let me tell you how we deal with that here. He said, it's good you noticed that. You have a responsibility to go to him now and tell him that and talk to him about it. And then if you need further counsel, or he's not going to respond, then I'll need to know about it. But if you need further counsel, you guys can come together. But the way we work here is you would go to him first. And Chuck was, you know, easily instructed in that. He thought, that's right. This is what I'm telling you here. In Matthew 18, and verse 15, you're familiar with this. Let's just lay eyes on it, however. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, and this is exactly what we're talking about, your brother, a believer, has sinned against you, what do? Go and tell his friends so that he's discredited. No, it says go to him. How many of you agree that's a hard thing to do? It's just so much easier to go to a friend, to somebody else, you know. Go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. You get this idea of candor and directness and eyeball to eyeball. I need to tell you something. Now, I want to tell you what. You know, what number two looks a lot more attractive to us when we are thinking about number three. We're going to go, well, I tell you what, we're just going to overlook this, you know, because I want to go. And every once in a while, you know, I'll hear a complaint and I'll just say, well, there's nothing at all wrong with you going to that person, looking them in the eye alone, just between the two of you, and helping them understand how that made you feel. And actually, I'm not at liberty to really tell you all the details, but this a couple weeks ago, I had a young man, he and a girl, they were on thin ice in their relationship, and I listened to that, and I said to him, you know what you need to do? You need to quit talking about it, and you need to go talk to her, and you need to ask her what she meant when she did and said those things. That way you have it on the table, you got it figured out, clear that up, you know? So he did, got things ironed out. It was just a matter of talking eyeball to eyeball. What often happens is we take offense when we hear words that somebody spoke when we weren't even there to hear them. And so we don't know the tone of voice. We don't even know if the words were accurately transmitted to us. You got to go get the actual words from the one who spoke them. And as much as possible, then you want to know their tone of voice or the context in which those... I've actually waited for 3 years to use the illustration that I'm going to spontaneously use right now. I heard Pastor Pine say one day, come on in, let's have a beer. Isn't that right, Pastor Pine? You said those exact words. I was there. I'm just telling you, those are the exact words he said. Is anyone shocked? You surprised? Pastor Pine, of course, you know him well enough to know that he didn't invite somebody into his house to drink alcohol, because we don't do that. He doesn't do that. But I enjoyed hearing it because I thought, I can use that. Now, let me give you the quote in context. He was calling on somebody. I'm probably going to mess this all up, but he was calling on someone, and they said to him, hey, come on in and have a beer. And those are the words he said, but now I wrested them out of context for my own nefarious purposes. You see what I'm saying? And I used them in a cheap tactic to get you to listen for a few more minutes here tonight. Yeah, you know, if somebody takes your words and takes them out of context, they can make you say things you would never say, just like I did to poor Pastor Pine, who's defenselessly back there with his wife innocently suffering right now. No, he didn't say that. So go to the person and you say, you know, my understanding is you said this. Is that true? Help me. I like you. I care a lot about you, so your opinion matters to me a lot. And I understand you said this, and that really surprised me. Can you help me with that? And maybe the person will ask your forgiveness. Maybe the person will, usually they'll clarify why they said what they said. Go get the actual words from the person who spoke to them. And why do you do that? And here's why, and this is hard for all of us. It's counterintuitive. It's not natural for us. And the reason is we can't write off family. And if it's a brother, he's family, and he's always going to be family, and you're going to be in eternity with him, or if it's a sister, with her. You can't really say, I'm going to write you out of my life, and I'm going to completely, even if a person has disobeyed the Lord and disregarded counsel and walked away from the things of the Lord, and they're officially under discipline from the church, they are still a person, and you are to relate to them. There's a biblical way to relate to people, even under those painful circumstances. There's a right way to relate to folk like that. And but the one thing you can't say is, you aren't in my life anymore, and I pay no attention to you at all. And especially a brother, a person who is a brother, a sister in the Lord, you reconcile, remembering that you're going to be spending eternity together, so there's going to be an ongoing relationship. And again, I mentioned this before, but I need to reiterate, don't tell other people. Don't tell other people. This may be a great temptation for you. It may be for many of you, you've learned over the years, you don't do this. But if you haven't, it would just be a really good thing. Ask yourself, why am I what are my motivations for wanting to tell another person this? Don't do that. So work at this. And then before you go to the other person and you have that, you know, meeting with them where you talk with them about, you have ought with them, you have an offense against you. Before you do that, can I suggest that you do a little personal logging first? You know what I mean? Logging. It's like you go look in the mirror and you see if there are any logs or planks in your own eye. Because you know very well the minute that you open that conversation, if there's a log in your eye, the other person is either going to bluntly tell you or they're going to discreetly, you know, it's going to be kind of like, you're not going to get them to agree to restore the relationship. And if you have this glaring personal fault and you're unwilling to admit it or acknowledge it, does that make sense? And again, this is a humbling process. I'm like, this happened. I need to think about my own self. This is a couple times, this is recorded in a couple of the synoptics in Luke 6, 41 and 42. And it reminds me of Galatians 6, 1. If a person is overtaken with a fault, who goes to restore him? You that are spiritual, restore this one. In the New King James, it's you that are spiritual, restore him. So if he's overtaken in a fault, you're spiritual. You got to make sure you're spiritual before you go. You have to make sure you don't have a log in your eye. You do need to go, but you need to get the plank out of your own eye first. This makes all of us walk in continual humility and self-examination. Nobody's kind of holier than thou. Oh, I've got one on you, and I'm calling you out on it. No, you go in humility and you make sure that you don't have a log in your eye. That's what Jesus said. If you're going to go help somebody get a speck out of their eye, it's going to work better if you don't have a plank in your eye. Isn't that humorous? That's what Jesus said. So first, lay it out before the Lord. Second, perhaps overlook it if you can, if it wouldn't be sin to overlook it. Third, go directly to them. Again, you go to the Lord, you overlook it, you go directly to them. You haven't involved anybody else yet, right? Right? You haven't involved anybody else. Then the fourth one is like, this is sort of a trick, treat them like an enemy. What did Jesus say? How do you treat an enemy? Take your Bibles, look at chapter 5 of Matthew, verse 44. And Jesus, it's just so clear that you want to try to find a way out of it sometimes, don't you? When you have an enemy, you know, in your flesh, you want to kind of get off the hook. You know, yeah, but, do I have to do this? Here's what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, verse 43, Matthew 5. You've heard this was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I say to you, love your enemies. And then you've got three things he says to do, and they kind of graduate upward, right? He says, you talk, it's kind words, and then it's loving deeds, and then it's sincere prayers. Look at that. I say to you, love your enemies, If somebody curses you, what do you do to them? In other words, they say bad things to you, you say good things to them and about them. You know what's interesting is that people say, well, I just don't know what to do. He said, yeah, you know what to do. Jesus Christ himself in the Sermon on the Mount said what to do, and it is rare for me to find people who actually do what Jesus said right here. If people talk bad about me, the first thing that comes to my mind is to talk bad about them. Considering where that's coming from, I'm not surprised you would say something like that. I have a sharp tongue. I can just think of these things, you know, in my brain. Well, but Jesus said, if they curse you, you bless them. I want to know, like, have you done that? Is that what you're doing? That's what it says. Treat them like an enemy. How do you treat an enemy? Well, if they curse you, you bless them. And then do good to those who hate you. Yeah, you keep doing it. This is the next thing. Chris says, what if that doesn't work? And that's why Jesus said, okay, so if they stay after you, here's what you do next. And that's what it says right next. Here it says, thank you for expressing what all of us were thinking. What if that doesn't work? Then he says, you keep doing it. But then it says here, looking, it's right there, he said, do good to those who hate you. And this is like graduates upward. So now, first they were cursing you. They were just using their tongue. And now they're hating you. You do good to them. So you say good things to those who curse you. Bless those who curse you. And you do good things to those who are doing bad things to you. But what happens if they relentlessly stay after you and they don't quit? What do you do then? Go to prayer meeting. Pray for them. That's like the bazooka. That's like the nuclear warfare of a spiritual weaponry is, okay, I guess I'm going to have to just pray for you now. You mess with me, and now you're on my prayer list. That's the way it's going to work. I'm going to pray for you every day. You shouldn't have done that, you know. Every time I think of this, and I think about it when I wake up in the morning, and when I go to bed at night, and sometimes in the night, I'm going to be praying for you. And no fear, always praying the imprecatory psalms, you know. God, you know, curse them and let them fry in hell forever. And yeah, no, that's that. That's his business. Vengeance is mine. I will repay. So this is you treat your brother like an enemy. This is kind of like, how do you treat an enemy? Well, three things: kind words, loving deeds, sincere prayers. Now, what if that doesn't work? This is a great question. What if that doesn't work? This is exactly where my flesh goes when I look at this. I'm like, well, I did that because you said to do that. Like, And I was working the angles, God, and it didn't work. And then God would say to us, I think you misunderstood what I was saying. I didn't say to do this to effect a purpose. I just said, this is what you do. You just do this. I didn't say you do this so that that will happen. I just said you do it. This is what you do. And so that is just a powerful, simple, clear stuff to do when Christians hurt you. You lay it out before the Lord. You take it to the Lord first in prayer and not to somebody else. You overlook it if you can. And it's a wonderful thing to do. Sometimes you say, you know what? I know that's wrong, but I'm not going to hold it against them. I'm going to absorb that for their sake. I love them. And then where your treasure is, there will be heart will be also. You have made an investment in that person. Can I tell you a little quick story? I'm going to do that anyway, right? Yesterday morning, I got an email from a former church that said I owed $700 to them. I'm like, that's not good. Because I don't have $700 right now. I don't owe them $700. So I called them on the phone. And I said, I think there's been some mistake, you know. And, you know, it was obviously a mistake that had some old credit card information or whatever. And they ordered a big bunch of NIV Bibles, which I would never have done. And $700 worth of NIV Bibles. And I wouldn't have done that. Knew that wasn't me. I'm like, are you serious? Look at my version record. I would not order 700 NIVs. But when I called, the gal that answered the phone was a girl that grew up in the church. And I was pastoring there. Precious Christian girl. So it was a delight to catch up with her and talk with her a little bit. And she said to me before I even asked, she says, my brother's doing really well. I'm like, great. Because this kid was a rascal. He was. He would tell you. If he's here, he'd tell you I was a rascal. He might even use honest terms. He was a kid that at the time, you know, we got some probably hanging out somewhere in the building tonight that if we want to, we can attach all kinds of bad reputation to them. but it's unlikely that they're going to land on their feet and really make us proud someday or honor the Lord if we do that. And so it might be a better idea for us to just overlook what we can and what we shouldn't overlook, we must not overlook. So, and then treat them like an enemy. And then finally, this is the fifth thing, and it's really vital, and that is discern what God is doing. This is probably the most important thing. Is God in control of everything? Yeah, one person believes that. God is sovereign. You like the theological language for that? Is God sovereign? Same person likes that. Wow, you guys are like slow trains tonight. So you believe this, right? You believe God is in control of everything. Yeah. And he's good. He's all powerful. So he's in control of everything and he's good. And you believe that. So that includes when a Christian hurts you, right? Where did this come from? What's God doing? You got to ask yourself the question, when God allowed that other Christian person to hurt me, what was he doing? Who's really behind this hurt after all? Where's that hurt really come from? It comes from your father. You say, I'm sorry, Pastor, I had trouble with that. I mean, because the pain I am going through is excruciating. It's excruciating. I think Gene Edwards wrote this book called Crucified by Christians. The new version of the book is called Exquisite Agony. In the book, he talks about this word, excruciating. It's the same. It's from the same word we get crucified. But when I do this, I feel like I'm being crucified. It's excruciating. But, Lord, you don't understand. They misunderstood me. But, Lord, you don't understand. I'm innocent. But, Lord, you don't understand. They have worse sins than I do. He says, oh, I understand. Are you going to tell Jesus he doesn't understand being falsely accused? Are you going to tell Jesus he doesn't understand being crucified? Are you going to tell him he doesn't understand his father laying a burden of death upon him? The Lord Jesus, in agreement with the Father, took upon himself the sins of the world. Is that interesting? And it was an arrangement that was in the heart of the Father. And it's true with us, too, that when difficulties come our way, because people have hurt us, you can't say, well, that one escaped the providence of God. That one escaped the sovereignty of God. No, it had to pass through his hands first before it could get to you. So he must be doing something good with that. You know, that's the Romans 8, 28, 29. In what way is this going to conform me to the image of his son if I yield to the Father, is the question that you want to ask when you're hurt by another Christian. In what way is this going to help me conform to the image of his son, Jesus? This will help you a lot. What are you doing, Lord? What is God doing? You ask yourself that question, since the Father's behind it. And there's much more. Here's a little word picture that might be helpful to you. Imagine that person that hurt you. And maybe some of you actually have somebody in mind tonight, somebody that was unkind to you, or maybe even this is the hardest one. They hurt somebody you love a lot. And maybe you have a little videotape, a little DVD, a little film clip of that you replay in your mind every once in a while. And it's vivid and it's painful. And it hurts. Maybe sometimes you just replay it on purpose just so that you can remember how bad it was what they did. Maybe even you've grown to the point where you know exactly where to find that video. It's one of your favorite films because you go back to it over and over again. Now, that person that's behind that, you know, here's a picture. Imagine that there's been a terrible earthquake and you're walking and you're out. You have a spud bar. You're looking for people that are trapped in the rubble. And you see there's the person that hurt you badly and they're trapped under huge rocks and they can't get out. And you stand and you look at them for a while, and you have this big spud bar, and you just listen to them, and you think every one of those big chunks of cement is one of the sinful things they did against you or the people that you love, and maybe you're just going to let them die. They deserve it. They're crushed under the rock pile of their own sin. And suddenly there's a movement. You see somebody come from behind you rushing, just rushing, sweeping in behind you. And that person, you think you recognize them. They begin to dig into the pile. After a while, you look at them for a while. You realize it's a person with nail scars on his hands. And he's just digging into the pile. And he looks at you right in your eyes and says, "This is where I found you. I found you. You were under a pile of your own shameful sins, and I dug you out. This person is precious to me. This person isn't perfect. They've hurt you, but they're precious to me. Let's go to work getting them out of there." I heard a story as I was researching a little chorus I like. I like to look up the artist, if you will, to see if they have a consistent Christian testimony. And sometimes people write music that sounds nice, but you hear stories about that they really don't have a... This guy, Donnie, he had a tragic life. When he was just a little boy, his dad and brother were involved in an automobile accident and instantly killed. And he didn't have family, so here he went to live with, I think, an uncle. This boy, Donnie McClurkin is his name. The day of the funeral, the night of the funeral, his uncle began to horribly sexually abuse him. And shortly thereafter, another family member came in and began to abuse him, brought great confusion to him and great hurt. And eventually he came to the Lord and began to be open about his testimony and began to be used to the Lord in singing and singing gospel music and writing gospel songs. And I don't know where I stumbled across, but I stumbled across this little chorus. I want you to sing it with me. Are you familiar with this? We sing it a few times. He wrote this song, "Great is your mercy to me, your loving kindness towards me, your tender mercies I see day after day. Forever faithful towards me, you're always providing for me. Great is your mercy toward me, and great is your grace." It's a beautiful little chorus. Will you sing it with me?